This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, screenwriter and director Todd Solondz, has a strange sense of humor. He zeroes in on the kinks, malfunctions, and extremes of people's personalities. Some viewers found his 1998 movie Happiness in bad taste because the characters included a pedophile and someone obsessed with phone sex. But others thought he used these extremes to create a funny and perceptive take on the anxieties of modern life. His previous comedy, Welcome to the Dollhouse, was about the least popular girl in junior high, Dawn Wiener. His new movie, Storytelling, is told in two separate parts. The first part begins with a college student, Marcus, who's an aspiring writer but is very insecure about his work. He has cerebral palsy and has just written a short story based on his relationship with his girlfriend. He reads it in class and is critiqued first by his fellow students, then by his Pulitzer Prize-winning professor.
I thought that was really good, Marcus. Really moving and emotional.
Yeah, I thought it was really emotional, too.
And, I mean, really good word choices. It kind of reminded me a little of Faulkner, but East Coast and disabled.
Or Flannery O'Connor. She had multiple sclerosis.
And Borges, he was blind.
Updike has psoriasis.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm afraid I found the whole thing to be a little trite. Its earnestness is, it's a little embarrassing. And those adjectives are flat-footed and redundant. I'm sorry. I mean, anyway, don't. What do I know? Don't even listen to what I say. I mean.
Anyone else? Catherine is right. The story's a piece of You express nothing but banalities, and formally speaking, are unable to construct a single compelling sentence. You ride on a wave of cliches so worn, in fact, it actually approaches a level of grotesquerie. And your subtitle, The Rawness of Truth. Is that supposed to be a joke of some sort? Or are you just being pretentious?
A scene from the new movie Storytelling. When we first meet Marcus, he's passionately making love to his girlfriend. Only after do we find out he has cerebral palsy. I asked writer and director Todd Solondz about creating this character.
The last thing you want is to have a character defined by his affliction. I had actually auditioned a number of people with cerebral palsy for the role, but decided at the end that the best actor I could find would be someone who would have to learn to mimic a degree of this affliction. If you don't have a cerebral palsy, then the natural response is to feel for this person. And yet, of course, this person doesn't want to be reduced to, of course, just someone with cerebral palsy. It cheats him of the right to be admired on the one hand for who he is as a person, or on the other hand, to be condemned for who he is as a person and should be, I think, respected or not on the same basis as everyone else.
In your movies, you've created a lot of characters who are very depressed, very alienated, also very self-delusional. In your movie Welcome to the Dollhouse, the junior high school student at the center of the movie suffers every insult and indignity, from being taunted in the cafeteria to being threatened with rape at knife point. You grew up in suburban New Jersey. What were your school experiences like? Was that a difficult period for you going to school?
Well, it had its high points and its low points. I went to many different schools. I attended an Orthodox yeshiva. I attended a public school and attended also a progressive experimental school. And then I went to an all-boys prep school.
Wow, so, that's really so 360 degrees of schooling.
Yeah, so I kind of covered the gamut there. And I wanted, when I made Welcome to the Dollhouse, to make it a general public school, junior high school experience. I'm not sure, actually. I forgot what the question
was.
Exactly.
It was about your school experiences, but I'm wondering whether people say, for instance, at the Orthodox yeshiva, any kinder or less cruel than students in public school or prep school. Yeah.
Well, I do think that, of course, certain kinds of schools and certain kinds of teachers know how to handle the difficulties of growing up better than others. But there is inherence in all of us, and we are not quite so far removed from the childhood years as I think we like to believe sometimes, which is why I often explore or often have characters that are 11 years old. I can remember when I was 11 years old, and I remembered much preferring the company of adults and not quite understanding why they didn't look at me as one of their peers.
When I've read that you started writing stories when you were a kid. Did you write stories that express the kind of unhappiness and alienation that your movies express? Because I was thinking, if your stories as a child did express that, you'd be likely to have been taken to, like, a psychologist or a psychiatrist after the adults in your life read the stories.
Well, I wasn't taken to a psychologist or a social worker as a child, and no, after making my movies, I haven't been taken to a psychiatrist either. But as a child, I all I can say is I wrote a lot. I don't know why, but I loved writing, and it's a time of life when. I certainly never thought of the audience or of how I was manipulating or managing or guiding the audience. It was all a kind of a self-absorbed wonderland. I suppose I could look at it now. I still have some of these stories and so forth that I had written. I remember I had a continuing novel in progress at the time. Every week I would write another chapter and have my father's secretary would type it up for me. And it was a way of life at that time. There was a wonderful beauty to the process of writing at the age of 11 that I think I will never be able to retrieve. This a kind of purity, something that I will always strive to attain. But I don't think it's quite possible for me as an adult.
Now, you've taken the kind of alienation and discomfort that you write about and turned it into comedy, into a very kind of strange, eccentric form of comedy, but it's often comedy. And I'm wondering why comedy? And I ask that, I mean, for some people, comedy is just, it's where they live, you know what I mean? But it's not like you're being very funny or ironic in your approach to explaining things now. So does comedy feel like the natural place that you want to write in, or is it a more conscious thing that you're doing when you write comedy?
Well, I think my work is certainly reflective of how I see the world and how I experience it in some sense. What I find to be funny, I am often very moved by, and vice versa, that there is a connection between the two, and that if I'm not really moved, I probably won't find it very funny. My movies are comedies, emphatically comedies. They may be terribly sad and sorrowful and painful, but comedies nevertheless. And this is, I think, what may not sit well with many people, that I, in fact, do look at them in this way. But without this level of detachment that the comedy or irony, what have you, provides, I think that the material would be unbearable. I don't know that I'd be able to sit through it otherwise.
I want to talk about a scene that I think perfectly combines what you're talking about in terms of it being both very funny and very moving at the same time. There's a scene in Happiness where the son, who's, I don't know, he's probably around 13 or something, mm-hmm. comes...
11.
11, okay, yeah, that magic age.
Yes.
He's 11, he goes to his father, and I should mention here that his father is a pedophile, which, of course, the son doesn't know. So the son goes to the father, and he's really troubled, and he says, basically tells his father that He's uncomfortable about his penis. He's not sure if it's the right size. He's not sure it works right. He's not sure it works like the other kids, you know, have theirs work. And he's obviously really upset. He's really self-conscious. He's really uncomfortable, and he thinks there's something terribly wrong with him. And the father, who's actually a pedophile, has to, like, comfort his son and kind of explain the facts of life a little bit. And at the same time, this kind of really syrupy music is coming up in the background, the kind of music you'd expect in the heart-to-heart talk in an afternoon soap. So this scene is operating on two levels at the same time, at least two levels. On the one hand, it really is kind of moving because this kid is really uncomfortable about something that makes everybody uncomfortable when they're young. And he needs some advice. And at the same time, it's really funny because the father, who really wants to help the kid, is also a pedophile. Why don't you talk about writing that scene? Because it's typical of the kind of scene that some viewers would probably find really kind of sick and upsetting, in part because the father is a pedophile.
Well, yes, there is something of a tightrope, I suppose, as you may have put it, that I walk here. You try to be truthful to the reality that you set up. Otherwise, I think it'll all just feel cheap and false and not really have any meaning that can stick. When I write a scene, I, in a sense, become an actor. I become the kid. I become the father. And I try to imagine myself in both characters' shoes and how each person would feel and what's on that person's mind, what they want, and how they manage to communicate with each other. The point always is to make it fresh so that it doesn't, on the one hand, feel like you've seen it already, and yet on the other hand, doesn't feel gratuitous or just out to shock you for the sake of shocking you. It has to feel real and in the moment.
I think part of what makes the scene funny, too, is that you've taken this real father-knows-best type of setting and put in the kind of subject matter that kids really worry about that would never be on Father Knows Best. And also, you've taken, you know, you talked about not wanting something false, but you've intentionally used that kind of false sentimental music as a backdrop to that scene.
Well, there's a commentary, of course, with the music to give the sense of that this is the kind of family you might see on the Lifetime channel, that it's like a family that you might see on TV, but of course you won't, not on network TV, at least.
My guest is Todd Solondz, screenwriter and director of Welcome to the Dollhouse, Happiness, and the new film Storytelling. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Todd Solondz, screenwriter and director of Welcome to the Dollhouse, Happiness, and the new film Storytelling. You create characters who are often very disturbing, particularly in Happiness. You know, one character is a pedophile, one character is a phone sex, you know, someone who calls up strangers to engage them in phone sex. Everybody in the movie is self-delusional about something. You know, there's one of the sisters in the movie is a popular writer of transgressive S&M fiction, and she worries that she's not authentic because she writes about rape, but she's never been raped, and maybe if she was raped, then she could be authentic. So everybody's just a little bizarre in this. At the same time, I think you've written the characters with so much sympathy, even though they're very comedic, that it's almost as if you're playing out everybody's worst fear about themselves, kind of blowing out of proportion everybody's fears about their own fantasies or their own feelings that make them uncomfortable and have them embodied in these other characters.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. I sometimes people look at my movies and will say to me, why do you make movies about such ugly characters? And well, I say, well, they're not ugly to me. The people may not be conventionally beautiful, so to speak, but it's not only in spite of their flaws, but in part because of their flaws that I can more fully embrace them as human. And it doesn't mean, for example, that you have to sympathize exactly with certainly what Bill Maplewood has done is unequivocally unforgivable. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
The pedophile character.
Yes, yes. Nevertheless, to be able to recognize him as human and not just the demon seed. I think accords oneself, I think, a greater level of humanity. And of course, it's much easier if you want to create sympathetic characters. It's the easiest thing in the world. You know, you give them cancer, and of course, your heart will go out to the person. But that's not a very challenging way of working, let's say, for me as a filmmaker. What I am most compelled by is getting into the minds, into getting into subjects in ways that I think may force us to reevaluate our perceptions about not only other people, but ourselves.
Well, have you ever had people make assumptions about you that you found upsetting?
Let me say this. If someone doesn't like what I do, if they hate the movie, I don't have a problem with that. But occasionally there will be a journalist who will say something of a personal nature that, of course, I will take offense at. But most people are not like that. I remember back when Welcome to the Dollhouse was being received, often very favorably. Nevertheless, some journalists would describe Heather Matarazzo or myself physically in very unflattering terms. And I couldn't help wondering how that the irony seemed to elude these journalists, that they, in fact, became the seventh graders in that movie. To describe this 11-year-old girl as an ugly girl, I just can't understand how anyone would write that and how one can possibly write that and feel good about oneself.
It sounds like when you were young, you weren't a very social person. You liked to stay home alone. And when you make movies, you kind of have to be a social person in a way, not necessarily going to parties, but being on the set with a lot of people, engaging with actors in a way that they're willing to still work with you. Do you think that you've been changed by the act of making movies?
It's true. I think that my character really isn't designed well for being a director on a set. I don't really enjoy the position. I don't get much pleasure out of all the power that I'm accorded. I get no adrenaline high from this. All I dream about while I'm on set is being back home again. It's an assaultive process. And one in which you simply don't have the absolute control, far from it, that you have as a writer when you're working alone in your room. Nevertheless, if someone's going to screw it up, I'd rather it be me than someone else. So I take on the job. On the other hand, I have to say, you know, it's part of the dilemma, part of the reality of being the filmmaker I am, at least, is that I find that when I am writing alone, my fantasy, of course, is being out there on set. Anything but being alone in this room.
I want to ask you about one scene in your new movie, Storytelling. There's a sex scene in which you obscure the sex act that's going on by just taking an orange rectangle and covering the actual coupling with the rectangle. Did you actually shoot the scene as a sex scene and then cover it up?
Here's what happened, and it's really it's more of a Soviet red, I believe, than an orange.
Okay.
In order to make this movie, I needed a certain amount of money that only New Line was going to provide. That's the studio that financed it. Finally, so it was either make the movie with New Line or not make it. I knew that New Line would not be able to release a movie that was not R-rated or PG-13. They will not release NC-17 movies. And I knew I had a scene in it that was a little bit troublesome. So I put in the contract, and negotiated in the contract, the ability to put beeps and or bars as necessary, as need be, in order to procure the R rating if there would be a problem. I've always felt good about this, that in any movie, that if there was going to be a problem with the ratings, I always wanted there to be, I'd rather there be a big red box covering something up, or a beep covering up a line, than to having something removed. So for me, this is very much a victory to be able to put this red box over that shot rather than having the shot removed. I didn't want to have to redesign the movie to appease the needs of the ratings board. Of course, when the film was finished and we did have that big red box there, the head of the studio saw it and he said, over my dead body, you're not putting a big red box in this movie. But because I had negotiated at the get-go the ability to do that, the contract was respected. And this will be the first studio movie released with a big red box in the middle of it. I'm very proud. And I think that it actually adds a layer of meaning, I think, to the film. It does make it more overtly political in a way that I had never imagined it would be.
Well, Todd Solondz, I really want to thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Todd Solondz wrote and directed Welcome to the Dollhouse, Happiness, and Storytelling. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.